Well, time for our signals feature this evening, and markets have been reading signals on global inflation, the future of monetary policy, all wrong. 9 months ago, they went mad in anticipation of the huge number of rate cuts that we're going to see and have yet to materialize. And our signals feature this evening is recalibrating a little bit with the help of the chief executive at Pan African Investments and Research Services, Dr. Iraj Abedian. Why has everybody got this cycle, Iraj? I say everybody, most people, got the cycle so wrong.
Good evening, Bruce, to you and to the listeners. I think we got it wrong for two reasons. One is unpredictable and somehow chaotic political, geopolitical risk in the globe. Nobody could have predicted the timing of what has transpired in the Middle East. Over the past 6 months, and more specifically over the past week, with the Iranian attack on Israel, following an Israeli attack on the Iranian consulate in Syria. The second one is that I think even central bankers, including Fed, they underestimated the impact of structural pressure on production costs and trade costs. So inflation staying higher for longer was not predicted. They thought it's the usual time after 9 months prices adjust and after four quarters you can go back to the baseline. And the reality is that the global economy is still suffering from the consequences of three successive disruptions. One, the COVID pandemic that has still the tail end of it. Hot on the heel of that, you had the Russian invasion of Ukraine that pushed up the cost of a lot of productions and disruption to the global logistics. And then over the past 6 months, you have compounded logistical global trade in the Red Sea. And all of this means that the cost push and inefficiencies have just kept the prices or costs higher for longer, which means central bankers have to keep interest rates for higher for longer.
What's been amazing, though, is to watch how the absolute fear of a U.S. recession has evaporated. And now what worries me more than that is the fact that nobody sees any risk at all. Look at the U.S. economy, looking at the way the U.S. stock market is running, looking at the way the U.S. dollar is performing. It is as if fear has evaporated from certainly from that part of the world.
Absolutely. And then, of course, the other side of it, the other side of the world, China, ran into growth problems and unemployment problems and its own type and variety of cost push increases, trying to cut interest rates to boost economic growth. Then inflation is picking up. So the other side is that the second largest economy in the globe is running into sort of more normal economic cycles, not growing all the time at 6 and 7%. At the same time, U.S. has become a safe haven, an economy that is investing in its infrastructure, investing in its manufacturing, and also investing in its security industry. And all of that has kept the American economy better in a better shape than everybody expected.
It's interesting, Andrew Bailey, who's governor of the Bank of England, is speaking somewhere, probably in London tonight, to talk about how a fragmented world economy is more vulnerable to shocks. And we are seeing big dislocations happening. Geopolitics, of course, the politics of colonization happening, whether China ever does try to take over Taiwan, Russia's attempt to take over of Ukraine, and of course the invasion by Israel of Gaza are all sort of part of a bigger story. But here we've got this really fragmented world, and we're behaving as if there aren't any shocks in the system because we can't see the shocks. But fundamentally, I think Andrew Bailey is right in terms of his assessment here. If you don't have cooperation and collaboration across borders, you do run the risk of short, sharp shocks coming through the system.
Absolutely. I mean, we used to have sort of two blocks in the global economy, and that was bad enough from generating each of them its own shockwaves. Now we have a multipolar, so to speak, global economy fragmented across different fault lines, and each of them injects different types of geopolitical risk. Russia, Europeans, Middle East, China, United States, and increasingly these fault lines are having successive shockwaves that increases geopolitical risk at different levels and in different forms. Some of them affect our energy prices. Some of them affect the logistical cost push. And very importantly, when you have an environment or a period of intensified geopolitical risk, in the name of security, nations have to slow down economic activity. Port inspections take longer. Ship inspections take longer, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. All of it, at the end of the day, in economic terms, pushes up the cost of production. We're using productive assets, productive resources to slow the economy down, to slow trade down, to slow transactions, to slow flow of funds, all of that. So essentially, we're investing in creating inefficiency, and that ultimately slows the growth, the global economy, and keeps inflationary impetus or influences into the global economic system. And that means when inflation stays higher, central bankers have no choice but to sit on their hand, watch it for another month or two or quarter before they cut the rates. And even when they want to cut the rates, they're going to be very, very moderate. They're not going to be predictable and so-called hawkish about it.
And then, of course, we haven't even spoken about the vagaries of politics and, you know, voters who are inclined to go for populist or more populist politicians in times of great difficulty. Anybody who tells them a lie that they feel they can believe or at least trust, or at least it's different from somebody else's lies, they may go with. And so we face some fairly, you know, big changes on that particular front as well.
Absolutely. We have a very toxic blend of populism and nationalism. America first, China first, South Africa first, anti-xenophobic, us first and others just stand the queue. All of that also feeds into the populism that then wants to use resources for not necessarily the most productive way, but it does also mean that it prevents or blocks integration, which is conducive to efficiency and higher growth and lower prices. Now, every time that economies, whether they are big or small, they prevent integration, they slow down efficiency, and the flip side of it is that they increase inefficiency, higher cost, and more structural inflationary impetus into their own society. So I think we have those two currents at the same time happening, and then they compound the security problem that we have at the regional or global level.
Dr. Rajabedian, reading the signals for us this evening, the Chief Executive at Pan-African Investments and Research Services. Iraj, thank you very, very much.